Wayne McAllister, member at large. Bob Morrison, represents Sportsman.
First off, we begin the roll for Kevin. They're official, all of a sudden. Get your letters up here from
Kevin, did you do background check?
I've been on the internet for a long time. Didn't have the owner at work. Has everybody looked the agenda? We're having an approval on the agenda.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Who was it and who seconded it?
Unanimous.
Who motioned and who seconded?
Rod made the motion. Wayne seconded.
Can I insert something about the agenda? Trina Hedrick, Regional Aquatics Manager. I'd just like to give an update on Red Fleet Reservoir. I don't know what the official process is, but just a heads up that it might take 5 minutes.
Okay, so you want this added to the agenda?
Sure.
I believe that could be inclusive. What do we do about that? We'll put that as an information?
Yeah. You can add it to mine if you want to read it.
Okay. That's a little bit.
That's kind of loose.
Okay. Minutes? Do you get a chance? Minutes over?
Motion on minutes.
Motion.
Rod
minutes.
Rod makes motion on minutes.
I'll second.
Wait a second.
We're a team, Rod.
Yeah, we'll get it there today.
All in favor?
Yeah,
that's right. It passed. It matters. Wildlife Board update. Del Brady was elected the chair of the board meeting before last. He does a good job. I'm impressed with him. All the action items that we voted on before passed unanimously. The changes was on the Cougar Management Plan. Josh Horrocks was there. Brought up with Mitch, failed to get in the motion, in our motion, about the ours going to the harvest objective, rather than the plan, that was passed. So Diamond Mountain will be under the harvest objective. The rest of the community management plan passes present. So, a couple other there's a bill legislature to reclassify wolves to be treated as the same as cougar bear. The sage grouse, some of the looking will be listed. They'll make up their mind how they're going to list them in 2015. I don't know the answer, but it's whether it be sensitive or endangered. Other than that, there's no changes, but Josh did a good job. And the information he had was good. So that was about the only thing in the wildlife world, other than everything that we voted on.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman. Is there a couple of members of our regional wildlife
board? There was
a pair. The replacement couple.
Yeah, they have the new members there.
So there's a couple of new members?
Yes.
Do you know who they are? I knew it was coming. I didn't know if it was.
Mike's last name.
Here.
think John Bear was one, wasn't he?
John Bear is one.
It's John on.
Yeah, Mike King, I believe, is the other
one. Mike King.
Tom Hatch.
Tom Hatch. Rick finished his term and Xavier was out, and Tom left early to do an Elias mission.
Which one replaced which one?
Pardon?
Did John replace Tom? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or did Mike replace
Mike
Tom?
Mike replaced Rick.
Okay, regional update.
I just have one question for you from Mike. What about the bear top area through there? Is that also put on the harvest objective? I believe it, or was it already on there? I believe it was already on there.
It's harvest objective. It was harvest objective.
It was already, so they just had to sign it.
Unless they changed it.
Okay.
How or was it the way we passed it? It was already on there, I believe.
I don't think it was already on there. That's just...
The only change that was made, other than the plan that was presented, was diamond.
Okay.
And
before I give the regional update, do you have any questions on the sage grouse stuff? That's kind of a big deal around here. It's kind of confusing. If you'd like me to keep it in summary where that's at, I will.
No, I'll
skip
by the
first letter
we get along.
No,
I
can
love the summary on that.
I'd love to hear
the summary. I'll give you the very short version since I'm kind of talking off the cuff here. The rudder review to be listed, and it came out as warranted but concluded, which is, what does that mean exactly? We're saying we should have listened to them when we did. And what the official life service came out with. Then what they did is they went back to the BLM and said, okay, these things are in trouble. We're giving you one more chance. And so they set this 2015 deadline. And they want the BLM to develop a nationwide plan, which is West, of course, but a multi-state plan for how to manage these things to prevent them from becoming this. And that's on the fast track. We just got a copy of that plan last week, and our comments were due yesterday. They gave the state 1 week to comment on that plan. And so that's on that. That's the preliminary plan. It's getting put in place, by the way, while they develop the bigger plan. But those preliminary plans lay the foundation for the bigger plan. So in a nutshell, that's where that's at. In the past, each sort of management areas have their own plan, their own stipulations. That's going to be supplanted now by this national plan. And we're making a big pitch. Like Utah's plan, we want to use that as much as we can. I don't know how that will turn out. It's pretty much all happening back in Washington, D.C. So, pretty quick, this preliminary plan is being put in place, and then they'll develop from that their plan, and then in 2015 the Fish and Wildlife Service will review that again and say, yeah, that's adequate, we won't list them, or that's not adequate, we're going to list them. So that's kind of a 50-cent version of where we're at.
How does that work? So you got an area that's really good, let's see, it's adequate, another area isn't. I guess there's a danger there too, as well as the areas where
Yeah, that's part of our frustration in Utah is we have many populations that are doing well. We have some that aren't doing so well, but diamonds is an example. Diamonds are good. Scarborough's doing well. But the way they look at these things is they sort of ignore borders. State borders, Indian borders. They look at their historic range. And so basically Wyoming's driving this. You know, a very high percentage of the sage grouse habitat and the sage grouse are in Wyoming. And so if Wyoming succeeds, we all succeed. If Wyoming fails, we all fail. So that's, I think, all the other states, including Utah, are a little frustrated by that. We feel pretty good about our plan. We said our numbers are stable. We like to push our plan to be incorporated in the national plan. We'll see how that turns out. But that's the short answer. they look at what they define as historic range, and then they look at the, what they consider the healthy population within that. So there could be several healthy populations, but if there's a lot of unhealthy ones or declining populations within that unit that they're considering the historic range, then that's how they'll go.
Are you aware of what the current population size is?
In Utah? I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
If they do one day, will that take them off? We wouldn't be able to harm anyone to save them if they go in danger.
That's there's monitors. Then they basically take control of that management. But the bigger one will be oil and gas operation. If they go in danger, you know, there's going to be some pretty heavy handed management speak for us. At least that's usually how it goes. It can have a serious impact on that as well as wildlife management in general. They have a very big stick with Fish and Wildlife Service does, and when something's listed is in danger with a lot of risk. So it's hard to speculate because they have their processes to review all these things as well. The state's position has typically been, hey, let us manage them, we're closer to the ground, we know the habitat, we know the people. And I think we can show we've had success with that and with many species. So that would be what Utah continues to say, I think. If there was this endangerment, it was 10 years before that. Speeds back in Washington, D.C. start making all this decisions.
It's just more ammunition for environmentalists.
Yeah. But you know, like I said, there are some success stories out there. There are. Utah's one. You know, we've got some populations in trouble, we do. But we've also had some success. So I don't think it's all me. I really don't. But we're losing control of the UT. This is being taken out of Utah's control. With that, I'll launch into the regional update. One thing I want to make a correction. Back in April, you can remember, there was a couple of rags there. I was talking about the budget. I probably bored you guys all to see that. I was talking about the sort of tangle of federal and state programs, and some are being cut, and some are not. And somewhere along the line, I mentioned that the state general funding was being cut, and that was a mistake. What I was thinking of was the state wildlife grant, which is a federal program. So I misspoke, and I had some questions about that. I don't want to clarify that. We have had a lot of cuts, but the legislation has actually been very good to us. And as you guys know, the local legislators, both John Matt and Sam Kevin, that passed the thing. Including the supporters of wildlife. But in general, the legislature, I think, realizes how important wildlife is to the economy, including the DWR. And many agencies took cuts last year, we did not in general. So I wanted to make sure to clarify that. Sort of the next big one I wanted to talk about, many of you probably saw that whirling disease was found in the Green River. That was kind of a big deal. It was in the Tribune. That didn't surprise any of us. We knew it was coming. It was found upstream several years ago. It was just a matter of time before it worked its way downstream and showed up in the Green River. There was a article that came out. In fact, Roger was quoted in that. And it was said it's probably not a big deal to the fishermen. I kind of want to clarify that because whirling disease isn't a big deal. But we don't think it's going to impact fishing up there for a couple of reasons. One is most of the wild fish in that river are brown trout, and brown trout have a natural resistance to whirling disease. Another reason is that the rainbows we saw are fairly large, and the whirling disease is a crippling disease. It gets in their spine and causes them to spin in a circle where the name comes from. And so larger, older fish are not impacted that way. The soft fish are not impacted. And also the waters that tend to be impacted, we saw this in Montana and other places, are maybe streams or lakes that aren't that healthy for the trout anyway, and that's typically the case with diseases. We've got a population that's kind of hanging on, not doing great, and then you throw a disease on top of them, and then you've got a big problem. And so for all those reasons, we don't expect this to really maybe impact the fishery. What it is going to change is that we don't want to transport out of there, so you're going to see more of an effort for sets of washing stations and a lot of science for for fishermen to wash their boots off, wash their boats off, that kind of thing, so we can stop the spread of that. That was a major impact. I'll kind of keep rolling along maybe on the Green River. We did our fall electric fishing last week. It's two nights, and we got rained on. It's historically always true. We think it'd be sunny everywhere in the west, and on that night, and that's gone it rains. But we got some pretty good numbers. We had some technical problems the first night. The numbers were down, but they fixed those with the year of the sample year. And then we got numbers that were more consistent the second night. Still wouldn't get that data. But the biologists tell me that those fish look really good. Especially the rainbows down a little lower. It's really big, fat, like the rainbows. So they're pretty optimistic about that. Sort of sticking with the DAG kind of theme. The coping egg was ongoing, and that's been declining for a number of years. We've been stopping coping to try to get that back, and it seems to be working. We were up to 1,500 coping this year that we're taking, and that's up from 1,000 last year, so that's a 50% increase in our coping. That's 60,000 eggs, so we're pretty excited about that. Looks like our fire efforts are still going. Coping is falling down, or quite successful. And Ron had kokanee day last Saturday. It's kind of an outreach effort where people come by and get to see him. And he had over 200 people, I think, stop by that day. So that was a success as well from an outreach point of view.
Kathy, how are your control efforts on the burbot going? Simply much.
What do you want to know about
it? How are your control efforts on the burbot going? With the unlimited fishing, you know, throwing that, or no throwing them back? That having an effect?
It's tough to measure and it's tough to do. You know, we had we called it the burbot batch, and we had some sponsorship from Wyoming with that, which helped to make it legal, by the way, but when we had prizes given away to the burbot being caught, that was hugely successful. I predict the tons. Do you remember, Trevor, offhand? It was, I mean, it's tons. Four tons of burbot were taken out during that. It was a lot of fish. That's a big lake, and there's a lot of fish in there.
Sure.
So these things are always kind of a wait-and-see kind of thing. It's difficult to over-harvest a fish like that, but that's the best tool we've got right
and
now.
You're just trying to suppress their numbers so that you can increase your company and...
You know, they compete with the sport fish, and they also eat the eggs as sport fish. So they're harmful. They compete for food. And it's kind of a double-edged sword, because they're not a bad sport fish themselves. I mean, they taste pretty good, and in a lot of parts of the country, people like them, and I have a feeling that you can see more and more interest in those here. There's no way to get rid of them.
Having an effect on your kokanee numbers up there?
Well, this year they're up. The kokanee are way up, but we've been stopping too. So that's a little confusing. We've sort of clouded the water a little bit because that's going to be kind of a wait and see kind of thing. That's just the best tool we've got, so we're using it. It may work, it may not work. Maybe I'll let you jump in at the end on your stuff, and then if you want to correct all the mistakes I made here, you can do that. kind of sticking with the fish theme, since this is the fish meeting. Oh, the cutthroat trout, you know, we did the spawning of cutthroat was successful at Lake Canyon and Sheep Creek. We've also had a habitat project at Lake Canyon. In fact, that would be a good one. Kerry was asking about some projects. That's an interesting project. Stream restorations are very expensive and very difficult. That's one we've been doing. And other than some trespass cows that got in there, a little damage this spring, it's still be pretty good. That might be a good sort of field trip for the control effort for you guys. Like I said, you don't see those projects throughout because they're so expensive. But this is an important lake to us, and that's an important stream, and so we get a chance to look at that. The fishing contest we've had that the last several years. In fact, we're probably going to address that, I think, in some of the topics today. We had that tag fish contest in the Bay State, and we do success. We had 70 fish returned that had tags in them, and we gave them a lot of prizes that were donated by local places. In fact, didn't some little kid win that this year? It was kind of cool.
No, that was last year.
Is that last year?
Yeah. But there were a couple of little winners.
Yeah.
3 and 4 year olds.
It's kind of fun. Yeah. And then, more good news kind of on the fish side. The trout production is at an all-time high. You know, we restored many of our hatcheries now. We've got some very high-tech hatcheries. I was just out for White Rocks today and made me realize it's been several years since we got that rag up there. So if you guys are interested, I got a range of tour of that. It's a pretty high tech bathroom. We've got oxygen injection, and they're actually mixing hot water with cool water to get the right temperature for the species, the ways of coping through there, and wailing, and then they can be really sensitive to the water temperature. So if you're interested, you can use that. It's close and easy. Maybe I'll end it there, Trent, and let you jump in and talk about them. Maybe I'll do that for you. Gail passed these out for you. They put together rack training, which I took care of with. Is that right? This is the package she put together. She, guys, this is yours. And then there's some sort of information about management in general and also the sort of the process here. And then there's a copy of the code book as well as the laws that the game applies. So those are yours to keep, and hopefully those are useful records for you guys. And give us a call if you have a question.
Okay. Hey, again, my name is Trina Hedrick. I'm the Regional Aquatics Manager. Drew submitted propose a regulation change for the region about red fleet walleye, so I thought I'd give you guys a little bit of information beforehand. Just in history, for those of you who may be new or don't remember, we first observed recruitment of walleye, an illegally stocked fish in red fleet. In 2008, we saw two distinct age classes through our annual gill netting. We caught 22 fish in two of our three nets. But for those of you who go way back, we actually first observed them in 2002. And one walleye was captured in our annual gill netting. Another was caught by an angler that year. And we just didn't see them in between, so I think everyone was hoping that the problem was contained. It wasn't going to get any worse. That didn't happen. So in 2008, we contacted the Winnet Conservancy Water District, just letting them know that we'd like to get together with them to discuss the potential option for rotenone treatment. I don't know whatever came that I do know that the Wildlife Board approved a must-kill regulation for all walleye. So any angler catching walleye in red fleet from 2009 on was not allowed to return that fish to the water. So we luckily had a biologist in our office that had to do a master's project. We needed some information collected on these walleye and red fleas. It was a big question mark for everybody. So just kind of worked out. She'd get her master's project done. We'd get some information. And she netted on 8 occasions, May through September, over 200 total net hours. Pretty well covered the lake, at least along the shoreline. No deep water sets. She collected 124 walleye, varying sizes, and actually captured some big fish. You can see the one that she's holding. She also got 27 additional walleye captured by angling. She's been developing relationships with the anglers that actually go out there and really specifically target walleye. Her information, the average size is 151 fish, just over 2 pounds and almost 17 inches. So one of the big things she was looking at was stomach contents, because that is what we're really interested in, right? How is this illegal introduction going to affect our fishery? Right now we stock rainbow trout, and they were observed in stomachs, and the average size in previous years of those stocked fish was 8 inches. This year is the first year that Jones Hold can get us up to an average size of 10 inches, which Wyoming has had good success there, so we're kind of hoping that increasing that average size would get a little bit better survival. But we are definitely seeing rainbow trout and walleye stomachs. We're also seeing younger bluegill, bass, and walleye. So we know that our naturally reproducing fish are also going to be impacted. She's still, of course, working up her information from her last netting, which was last week, I believe. So kind of just in a holding pattern until she can get that information analyzed and written up. They also detected crayfish, other large vertebrates, midges in stomachs. This is kind of an interesting anecdotal observation. One walleye is 68 young a year, so fish that were spawned this year. So 68 young a year, largemouth bass, in one walleye, one sampling occasion. You know, you start applying that to the total number of walleye over an annual cycle. Start becoming concerned, I guess. In addition to now these observations, we also decided to do our annual krill survey at Red Fleet. We thought they would couple pretty well. We started that in April. That will go to next March. So just as of mid-September, 17 of 78 angler groups, I should say that's not, in, it's not 78 individual anglers, but angler groups. I didn't tease that information out entirely. So less than 22% interviewed of the angler groups were actually fishing for walleye. Kind of a small number. The remainder are seeking those fish that, you know, we actually intended to be there. What's concerning to us as managers of the water is we have really low catch rates. So we're seeing really low catch rates. And some of these folks are with Rocky Mountain Anglers and are actually tournament walleye fishermen. It's still four of those people actually seeking walleye, and four of them actually caught walleye. Mm-hmm. Over 4 months, over the summer, you know, it's kind of cause for concern.
Why are they so low on catching walleye?
We don't know, but we have a hypothesis. Okay, I'll be getting to there, that last one. In the meantime, we had teamed up with Rocky Mountain Anglers to hold a fishing event in June 2012. It was going to be on the 15th. Had donation from the county. We were going to do a walleye seminar, just like they do in Salt Lake. They had over 100 individuals show up this year. Then we were going to head out in the water Saturday morning. You know, take everyone out, boats, you know, these walleye fishermen, we're going to show people. We're just going to teach people how to fish for walleye in order to control their numbers, to control their impacts on the rest of the fishery. And of course, we should have expected this, because other fish within Redfleet are, do have mercury advisories. But mercury was recently found in high concentrations in walleye. This fall, and the basically the advisory from DEQ is that normal adults should limit their consumption of all walleye to 2 8-ounce servings per month, and then pregnant women and children should eat less than that. And in addition, we're thinking that that the low catch rates in the nets. Low numbers in the nets and the low catch rates for anglers kind of points to either we're just missing them completely, or there's just really low numbers of walleye in that reservoir. You're not really, it's just not a walleye, it's not adequate for walleye. So, given all that, what's next? I mean, it just keeps building and building. It's just this evolution of interesting findings and avenues that we need to take. But first things first, we need to finalize these studies that we. Analysis you're taking and finalize the creel. Drew's going to talk about the change from a must kill to a no limit having to do with that mercury advisory. So our options is to maintain that no limit if approved, and that's how we, I've actually heard people discussing closing reservoir fishing, that would be a huge deal. Discontinue stocking rainbow trout. I mean, if they're going to eat or even our 10 inch stocker fish, then that's kind of an expensive feeding program. Or do we go back to the idea of a roadrunner treatment, which would just reset the reservoir, and walleye we could get the, you know, return the other two-story fishery that was there, and hope that people are happy with that. I can tell you I don't personally feel that promoting the inland for walleye, I don't believe that's still an option because of the mercury issue. And also, if there really are low numbers of walleye, well, we're not going to see the high catch rates that are really going to attract people and get them interested in fishing. That is an update, and I'll turn it over to Drew, I guess. Well, I guess I should ask if there are any questions, right? Yes.
How successful would you be with the treatment?
If done correctly, which we would make absolutely sure of that it was done correctly. If it's done correctly, it's very successful. And of course, you know, it's a culinary water source, so that's an added concern. You just really need to make sure that you understand the size of your reservoir and how much water you have, the species that you're going to be treating for, because different species require different concentrations, and you take into account all factors.
Is it the loop after it goes downstream?
So I think that we would want to do it at a time where they weren't releasing, and this, I probably shouldn't go there. I don't understand operations at Redfleet just yet to talk about it. But my hope is that there's a time when they're not releasing out of Redfleet. But I guess if they're always releasing, then you've got a potassium permanganate that neutralizes. But you could expect a stretch of about a quarter mile that would probably be a fish kill in Brush Creek if you had to do
that. Yeah, you know, the Lemangue will kill fish too. So, you know, during that process of detoxifying, you will kill a few fish in that reach.
It'd be a small reach if you're, again, doing all of this correctly. But, yeah, you just got to kind of be realistic about the expectation.
What would be the length of time before the reservoir was reconstituted sufficient?
You can start stocking the very next year because Rhodone breaks down in...
And you'll still be starting with 8-inch stocker fish, so...
We could go back to...
You could go back to fingerless, really.
That'd be a lot cheaper. Something like offices on that. But I think we'd want to probably get with the warm water folks again, too, and see... I think we'd want to get with the warm water folks and see, you know, how important was this water and do we want to continue that aspect, too, in which case
so, so the basic gist of it is one out of every five groups of fishermen are fishing for walleye with 4% success rate. They're not catching other fish in addition to that. And the option,
they might be. I didn't break that up.
Okay, see, and that would be interesting to find out if the people who are fishing for walleye would continue to visit Red Fleet to fish for other sport fish. Does that make sense? So if they're going to be continued fishermen of the same reservoir, or if you're going to lose 20% of your overall fisherman population.
Were the walleye fishermen only walleye? Were they only fishing for walleye, or was it typically multiple?
You know, this was just a real quick, you know, I'm just going to go through the data sheet. So I do believe there was one group of people focusing on walleye that I recall that were, you know, kind of walleye or bass.
Okay. So somewhere in between the two. If they're going to Red Fleet, my guess is they're going to Red Fleet. I'm just wondering economically what would make more sense for the state as well as for the fishermen to where we can get that back to a successful fishing facility. Because at this point, if it's not successful for anybody, killing it off for a year would give everybody the best opportunity. And if like you said, we can return to fingerlings, which is clearly less expensive, is that the best option for everybody?
We've demonstrated clearly Rotten Old makes economic sense. You know, the real issue is whether they'll put the walleye back in there. And this would have to be a real campaign to convince them that walleye don't belong in Red Fleet.
You know, I think that there needs to be a large campaign focused to anglers on that specifically anyway. And I've seen a little bit more recently than in the past, but I think that should be on your fishing license.
We're working on that.
Do not, under any circumstances. You know what I mean? And I think that people want other options for fishing, but I don't think they understand the ecological damage they can do by doing that.
That's true. And we're going to start a process. We've got a committee we're going to put together to work on that. There's an interstate committee going together, too. And this isn't a Utah problem alone. I mean, this is happening all over the West and other places much more severe. I mean, there's thousands of lakes in Montana that have...
500.
That have had illegal introductions, so it's not, Utah's problem is not near that severe, but it is a serious problem, and somehow we need to convince these anglers that that's improper behavior.
And that we'll actually listen to them if they come talk to us.
Yeah.
Since this is a public meeting, I'll throw that in there, that'll get recorded. Come talk to me, I'm a nice person, right? And we'll work for people.
Didn't we wrote known Steinecker, within the last 10 years? 15 years ago?
I believe that was a partial treatment, and it was just to kill off excess bluegill.
No, it was a full treatment.
Was it?
It was a full treatment.
What year was that, Ron?
About 20 years ago, Jack? I was on about 5 years.
And that was for bluegill and bass?
Jack was on too. So.
And there'll be some...
They treated it with powder. It was one of the first times they tried it.
I'm just trying to...
Learned all the things they shouldn't do.
People are still talking about strawberries. People are still talking about the strawberry floating, but that was a big deal, mostly because it's a big drop in the Salt Lake trout.
It was done 2 years before.
It's the biggest one ever done in the world, too. That's
yeah. Well, and not that it should be utilized specifically for this reason. But if we do end up making the determination that using Rotenone on Red Fleet is the best possible option, I would love to smear that all over the news. These are the reasons why. This is, you know, an illegal introduction of a species that doesn't need to be there. Make sure that that's very publicly known, that that's the reason that lake would be closed.
And it sends a very clear message to the right group. Whereas if you discontinue stocking rainbow trout, That sends a clear message, but you're kind of punishing the group that didn't want to see Wally in there anyway, because it's...
Exactly. Well, not only that, but placing the focus on what the actual problem is and where the problem originated, I guess is what I'm going for here.
Well, and some, you might have thought that was in jest, that comment about closing Red Fleet, but that's happening elsewhere. When northern pike show up in one of these important reservoirs in British Columbia, they close it to fishing. They close it.
And they close harvest of the species that was illegally introduced into that reservoir.
They're getting pretty serious about this in some places, and if those things show up, they're closing them.
Rightfully so. This is expensive and time-consuming, and it limits a lot of opportunity for a lot of people who live for that.
That's right.
And that's just not fair. Anyway.
Right. I agree.
One other question.
One more.
Was there prior mercury samples and stuff to see where the mercury levels were, things that way?
That's a great question for DEQ. I can tell you, I think, have all the information.
Bass or bluegill?
There was a listing there already on bluegill.
It was either bass or bluegill.
Was it bluegill? I have bluegill, but what do you remember?
I think it was just
Steinecker had largemouth, then Red Fleet would have been bluegill.
Can you guys have the mic and record this, please?
Oh,
so we can't remember because Steinecker also has a mercury advisory for bass or bluegill, so I think everyone's kind of getting confused between the two. But the prior advisory that I was referring to was in either bass or bluegill within Red Fleet. So it would make sense that the top predator would then bioaccumulate the next level and also become fish to watch. But in terms of water sampling, I can't really speak to that.
No, I'm just thinking the fish and the mercury concentrates.
Yeah. Okay. That was kind of my question too. Where did it come up before? Does that come from the soil?
Another question for DEQ. I've tried to contact DEQ. We've just been playing phone tech, and I'd really like to know if they're pursuing that. I don't know if they are, but I think it's a great question, and I think it's a question that more people in the basin need to ask.
What I'm hearing is that the more aggressive predator fish has a little higher mercury rating, and you get it from the other fish too.
But where is that coming from in the environment?
That's why the walleye can have more mercury than the other fish.
Well, one last thing, I'll give up the microphone. I want to introduce Roger, Vice Roger from the former life. The Rogers are new chief of fisheries or aquatics, I guess we call them now, and he's been around a long time to start with, and then a former sport fish coordinator, and we replaced Walt Donald, so we've had that job for about 5 or 6 years. And
about 6 years, yeah.
Yeah, and so we appreciate Roger coming down and being with us tonight.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
moving right along.
You'll see that, my name is Drew Cushing, I'm the sport fish coordinator replacing Roger. You'll see that this catch and kill and illegally stocked fish kind of is a theme through tonight's presentation. So tonight we have three different rules that we're recommending changes to. I don't know if you want to handle them all at once, vote on them separately. The first two are really short, one slide presentations, and then the last ones are, you know, specific waters.
So are they related? Or?
Not really.
Would your suggestion be we deal with them individually or all together?
They're short enough, they're simple enough, you might handle them just at one time. I don't think that would take any longer. You want to try that?
What do you think, guys?
Please have all the information and then go from that point.
Yeah. If you make all the presentations, we can...
Okay, we'll handle it at the end then.
Okay.
All right, sounds good. The public process this year, this is just a little background about how this year progressed. This, as you know or may not know, the spring informational, which we've done every spring forever, or at least the last 5 or 6 years, was discontinued this year. We just didn't get the public input, which, you know, tonight looks a little short too. So we tried other avenues to get public feedback. We solicited public feedback in printed news, radio, and television, tried to get them to call us, email us, send us in hard mail, snail mail. And then we tried an online survey, which we publicized and left open online for 6 weeks. And we actually received 1,200 or over 1,200 responses, which is really a success. And then each region hosted open houses this year. and try to get the public to come in and just discuss issues openly without any format or any agenda. Just come in and tell us what's on your mind. And so this is the approach we took this year, and the thought behind it was, you know, the anglers pay our bills, and we're trying to figure out who they are, what makes them tick, what we can do to help them out, to provide a better opportunity for them, while at the same time doing what's biologically sound. And so that's the approach we kind of took this year. The first rule we'll talk about is the private fish ponds rule. This rule is about 3 years old, and the intent behind this rule, 657-59, was to help us determine where private aquaculture could stock fish freely and what species, and where we needed to control or oversee what species of fish they stocked because of maybe species concerns. You know, cutthroat trout, three species, so on and so forth. And so we wrote this rule, and there's just a couple simple changes this year. The northern region in Rich County, Otter Creek and its strips, Little Creek and its strips, and Birch Creek and its strips, upstream from Birch Creek Reservoir, they're going to do some cutthroat restoration, which will remove the non-native fish, and the last thing they want is to have non-native fish put back in that drainage by, you know, private aquaculture. And so this would just basically force them to come to us to get a COR so we can go take a look at their pond and make sure that they're going about business right. In the southern region, this is the same thing. They're doing some cutthroat restoration in Garfield County on Center Creek, Paiute County on 10 Mile Creek, Birch Creek, and Clear Creek. And then in Sevier River, they're going to increase the drainage by doing a treatment on Clear Creek, which before was just a huck, the smaller huck, Pole Creek. And so since Pole Creek is actually a smaller trib of Clear Creek, then they would just discontinue the Pole Creek and just call it Clear Creek.
What's a huck?
Hydrologic Unit Code. It's a nationwide drainage assessment. So what they do is they start with the biggest ones, which would be one digit, like the Colorado River would have a huck one, perhaps. And then as the drainages get smaller, the more numbers are assigned. So each drainage in the United States has this specific number, which is really unimportant for us, just to know that, you know, 10 Mile Creek is the drainage and it's identified by that huck number. Anyway, those are the ones that they're doing the treatments on. And again, we just want to make sure that we're alerted and are aware of any fish that go in there and what species they are. And that's it for that one. So we'll be moving on. Rule 2, this one is R 657-58. And this is the fishing contest and clinics rule. And this one is about 3 or 4 years old. We had a tag fish contest section in there, which we're going to keep, but some of the stipulations in there were really stringent. We wanted to protect ourselves. We wanted to protect our regional staff, make sure that this didn't impact their work plan unnecessarily. However, that kind of hamstrung us on a number of tag fish contests that would have benefited us in our management. We had a walleye tag fish contest that Cabela's wanted to do on Utah Lake. And that would have benefited our June sucker recovery program, and we couldn't do it. And there are several out here that are really difficult. And so what we'd like to do is remove the deadline, which was the 31st of December, and instead just have the same deadline as all the other types of contests. And then remove the list of waters and remove the species of fish and just assess these on a case-by-case basis based on the biology, based on the benefit of the people who want to hold it, and the benefit of the Division of Wildlife. And that's all that we're going to do there. Now, the fishing rule and guide, 657-13. This is in section 16, and this is it's basically our fillet rule that we also redid, I think, 4 years ago, three or four years ago. And it was to make... number one, assess where we enforce the law for possession of fish. And we decided that we enforce laws at the water, up to the fish cleaning station, and beyond. They can fillet fish and have at it. And this was one exception that's kind of nagging. Lake Powell, we have anglers that go up for multiple days. They have camps. There's no limit on striped bass down there. The management down at Lake Powell is such that they want to promote harvest and they want to make it easy on anglers to harvest those fish, take good care of them, make sure that they're a meal and don't deteriorate over time. And so this would just allow anglers to fillet fish at any time and then possess those fillet fish at any time. And so, for instance, if they're up camping in the north half of the lake, stay for several days, and then decide to fish on their way back to the boat launch, they can possess those fish filleted while they're moving down line. That's basically what that says. Just region-specific recommendations. Willard Bay is a big reservoir in the northern region. It has a 6 wiper limit, which is a hybrid striped bass, and currently we're trying to propagate wipers ourselves right now. Right now we buy wipers from out of state, and it's a burden on us financially, and we can't really import enough wipers to fulfill all of our management needs. As such, wipers at Willard Bay, the limit would be 3. This is what we're recommending. This was actually brought forth by anglers in a number of different surveys that we did this year. And it's something that will help us kind of get past the shortage that we're having. So it benefits us and the anglers both. East Fork, Smith's Fork River. Currently it's closed to fishing, period, in the fall with the Kokanee Run. And there's a number of, there's a lot of people who hunt up there, bow hunt, rifle hunt during this time. And what they'd like to do is open it for fishing, but close it to the possession of Kokanee, which was the intent of this rule all along. And so it will allow these fall hunters to fish while they're up there camping, while they're not hunting. Lost Creek Reservoir, this again is in the northern region. This is a response to our 2005 angler survey and some feedback that we got in our online survey that indicated anglers want a variety of opportunities. They're willing to accept rules, additional regulations, if they get a larger fish. And so this is a way that we can do that. This is in a cluster of other reservoirs that all have, the 4 fish statewide limit on them. There's actually 7 reservoirs within 20 miles here that are all about the same size, all similar management. This would provide a variety of opportunity for anglers that may want to go pursue bigger fish. So this is what we're recommending, is a 4 fish limit. No more than 3, maybe under 15, and no more than 1, maybe over 22 inches, and all fish between 15 and 22 inches must be released. These are 3 community fisheries in the northern region: Garden City, Goodski Lake, and Adams Reservoir. These are brand new fisheries in the community fisheries program, and as such, they'll have the standard statewide community fisheries limit of 2 fish regardless of species. Hobbs Reservoir, this again is actually in the town of Layton. It's less than a mile from the Holmes Creek Reservoir, and it's a mile from Adams. And it's because of its size, it's about a 60-acre lake, really deep, good water quality, good flows. And the northern region is going to try a trophy limit with some artificial flies and lures only. It's a 2-fish limit is what they're recommending, under 15 inches, and all fish over that must be immediately released. The reason is this again offers that variety within an area where there's already opportunities for, basically a put and take fishery. This will hopefully add something and add variety and excitement to anglers in that area. Southern region, we're talking about illegal fish movement earlier. In the Virgin River drainage, we have 2 species that are listed as endangered. We spend millions of dollars each year to protect native species. We do removals annually. We do rodent treatments. We seine down there just consistently, constantly. Smallmouth bass have been identified as a threat in that agreement, and smallmouth bass have been confirmed in several reservoirs and both the Santa Clara and Virgin Rivers within the past year. So, what we'd like to do is have a no limit on smallmouth bass on Quail Creek Reservoir, San Paulo Reservoir, Gunlock Reservoir, Virgin River, and Santa Clara. Basically, this amounts to most of the water in the Washington County. Lake Powell, the changes to the fillet rule, fish may be filleted at any time, anglers may possess those fish at any time. And the third one was brought to us both by our manager down there, Wayne DeSavison, and it was brought to us by the Rocky Mountain Anglers, which are the walleye fishing group in Utah. They came to us with the exact same recommendation, take the limit off the walleye in Lake Powell. Walleye are a huge predator down there. Their numbers are increasing. They're a really good predator on especially largemouth bass out at Lake Powell. And so they could be impacting largemouth bass. Their population is increasing. The 10-fish limit that's on down there doesn't impact them at all. And so he wants to have no limit, which, again, makes it easier for anglers and coincides with his management. Also in the southern region, these are two new community fisheries, the Monroe Pond and Sullivan Virgin River Park Pond. Both those will have the two fish community fisheries limit on them. Southeastern region, Wellington Pond is a community fishery, brand new. And it, as such, it'll have the two fish limit. And then Farron Creek, Farron Reservoir, and Farron Reservoir tributaries in San Pete County. They're doing a removal of non-native trout up there, and they're going to restore cutthroats. And they're going to want to, in concession to the natives down there that live and fish and love that whole drainage, they conceded to no special regulations, which it has a number of it on, number of special regulations on it right now. And so in order to make them happy and help have a good relationship, they're just going to keep with a four fish limit in that drainage. This top one is just bookkeeping. This is a community fishery, and they wanted to close it while they have ice conditions to make it safe for kids and people who go down there and want to go fishing. So they're just going to close that to trespass. And then Deer Creek Reservoir. This is an illegal introduction. Last year at Deer Creek, it was white bass that were illegal introduced. This year, it's black bullheads. There's actually a lot of them. It's amazing how fast they reproduce. So there'd be a no limit on black bullheads. Anglers must not release them, and they must be immediately killed. Utah Lake, at least three confirmed incidences of northern pike in Utah Lake this year. They were surveyed by our folks in their annual sampling. We have endangered fish, June sucker down there. We spend a lot of money down there monitoring, making sure that those things are doing well. This year we found those northern pike. So, as such, no limit on northern pike. Must not release any, and they must all be killed immediately. Spring Creek. This runs right past our central region office, right next to our hatchery. If you've been there, it's just a little spring creek that runs through there. And it attracts a lot of kids who probably could be ticketed for fishing illegally. There's no reason for that. So we want to make sure that they can go in there and fish as they deem necessary. Red Fleet Reservoir, in response to the mercury advisories, instead of a catch and kill on walleye, we're going to have a no limit. We don't feel like it's in our best interest to force people to take those fish home with them, especially those that are within that advisory. And so instead of a catch and kill, it'd be a no limit, which hopefully sends the same message. We're not going to manage it. That's the message. Okay, this is just informational. This is one that we're going to throw up in every region. Panguitch Lake. This is a lake down in the southern region. I'm sure most of you have heard of it. It attracts a lot of in-state angler attention and out-of-state angler attention. Most of the use, well, it's about 50-50 is what I've heard. From Nevada, and then 50% from Utah residents. We spent $300,000 on a roadrunner treatment in 2006. We, at that time, formed an advisory committee to help determine the future of Panguitch Lake, what regulation they would accept down there, what everybody would be happy with. That's the regulation we put on. Now, as time goes on, you understand that if you make 50% of the people happy, you're going to make 50% of the people unhappy. And so we're beginning to feel that. A lot of people, the trophy anglers right now, want to protect all the fish and have no harvest and special regulations and special restrictions. And then you have the people who come and want to take fish home and have a good experience with their kids and allow some bait fishing. So that's what we're hearing. We're hearing from both sides. And so what we want to do is perhaps reform a committee of both groups and try and come to understand where we're at. What our chances are to create a regulation that everybody can be happy with. And more importantly than that at this time is to get an angler opinion survey out and to everybody who fishes Panguitch Lake and assess the risk of if we did change the regulation more of a trophy opportunity, what would we lose or what would we gain? And all of this keeping in mind that the reason we treated it with Rodenone and spent $300,000 on it was because Utah chubs were illegal to introduce there in the past, and they're almost impossible to get rid of. And so historically, we treated Penguins Lake about every 10 years or so, and we use Bear River cutthroats or Bear Lake cutthroats to control chubs, which is working well in Strawberry. We're trying it in Panguitch and in Schofield as well. The intent would be to manage it with a fish that controls chubs instead of spending $300,000 every 10 or 12 years. And so that needs to stay in place. Everything else is probably negotiable. So I believe that's it. And I'll take any questions.
Your question on your Washington County, why the no limit on the smallmouth bass? What is the current stocking, planning, where's it going?
We don't stock. We've never stocked it. According to the agreement, smallmouth bass are prohibited in the Virgin River.
Right.
And so the thing is that we have the ability to manage largemouth bass throughout the region. And the region believes that that this would be palatable to the, you know, to the anglers down there to have a no limit on smallmouth and, you know, have keep that limit on largemouth. And so as far as what's going to happen down there, the Virgin River Recovery Team goes down and removes fish annually. And they're going to continue doing that and feel that if this becomes a bigger issue than it is, if they can't remove them and keep them out, that we'll probably go to the road on treatment or something like that, more drastic.
Okay, and I didn't know, you know, if there was lingpin minnow in the Virgin River chub and some of that, that meant if those fish were being transplanted in the other lakes or what the intent was.
No. Okay. There's another fish that was illegally introduced. There's fathead minnows down there, and they are being moved throughout southern Utah, it seems like, right now, and they're probably a bigger threat than the smaller.
Can you briefly explain, specifically to people who might be listening to this, what the damages are of smallmouth bass communities in the Virgin? Just so people are aware of why that's a problem. I know that there's probably some people who love to catch a smallmouth bass, me included. Can you tell me what the damages are from smallmouth bass in that particular location?
Smallmouth bass, I'll tell you, the problem with the fish in the Virgin River and the reason they're endangered is because, you know, the dewatering and salinization. And there are pockets of cooler water that exist throughout the year. And those pockets are where these native fish congregate in the warmer times of the year. The problem is that smallmouth congregate, they have the same thermal, you know, tolerances. And the smallmouth will congregate at those same places and points. And when you congregate smallmouth on top of these endangered fish, there's only one fish that's going to win out. And that's the threat.
And so the smallmouth bass is a competitive species that will fight for basically the same small specific locations that the native fish are.
No, they're a predator, top level predator.
Okay.
And when they're in those congregated areas, their food source will be those native fish.
Oh, okay.
And that's the threat. We spend millions of dollars down in the Virgin River every year, you know, doing the work to keep those fish, you know, from winking out. And that's, you know, the threat, is that those species, if you allow this to go on and these smallmouth bass to take hold, you know, there's a chance that these fish might wink out.
Which fish should that be? The native
species?
Yep. The endangered native species that live in the Virgin.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the back? No questions from the audience? Don't have any comment cards?
Any comments from the right?
I've got a question. From the question of Kevin, what groups do we have in our region here as far as fishing groups? I just have a curiosity. We always got groups during the big game, but have we got fishing organizations like the Rocky Mountain Angler?
You know, there's not a lot of active groups here. Try to limit, you know, they just started a new chapter. We're struggling with that, but there's a new chapter that's been going. They're mostly interested in the Daggett County and the Great River area.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of active angry groups. There's this is the short answer.
Is there any fishing boats? The reason I ask it is, I guess it's pretty much a slam dunk, because I haven't seen anything, you know, as far as email, or there's nobody here to contest anything, so I guess.
There's the Grago, the Green River guys and outfitters, who have commercial agents. They're quite active in Nankin County. You know, fishing's pretty darn good the other day, so part of that's because we have a lot of good water, and part of it's just where we live. You know, it shows people are happy. We're not motivated to get more involved in a way, so it's kind of a funny paradox that we have. We might want public input, but it seems like we only get it when people are disgruntled for something. You know, if you're a fisherman in the Med Basin, you're usually pretty happy. There's a lot of nice opportunity out there, and so I just don't think a lot of people have a motivation to spend the time and energy to organize. That's my take on it.
So if they're unhappy, then that's when there's groups.
Yes.
And then you grab the cat.
We all have to have
busy groups, right?
We're all busy and have busy lives, so we've got to be motivated. And often that's what it is. We see changes. And that's a good way to get changes done, is to be organized in front of groups. And we're fortunate. You know, we have, you know, this area is probably one of the best areas in the West for fishing opportunity. You've got the Green River Flaming Gorge. You know, world renowned, and you've got high lakes on the one edge, you've got stream fishing, trout fishing, you've got, you know, warm water bass fishing, Pelican Lake, one of the best bluegill fisheries in the nation. So we're kind of lucky out here when it comes to fishing.
To me, it's a lot of fun. You think they have some groups, but
yeah,
it's all a group or something.
If we decided to close fishing, we could
I got a question. Northern Pike, is there any tributaries in Utah that have Northern Pike intentionally planted in them?
I don't think so.
And they're not a desired fish,
is there? They put them in there's a pond down in the Sevier Drain, which is a closed pond. Yeah, and the water doesn't leave there. So they put them in there back in the 70s, I think, the early 80s.
Because my comment was, if you was going to write a rule, you could write the northern pike not be introduced in any streams ahead, you know, rather than...
Yeah. You know. It may get there. Because northern pike are, you know, they're an issue for sure.
They come down from Colorado, too.
Yeah, I got one more thought. Just to talk to them. Maybe if you manage the wildlife, do your fish, and all the other day groups come in.
Well, the habitat here makes us look good on the fish side.
Oh, yeah.
We have a lot of good water to be able to do. Stop on both produce fish. Or deer.
Hit the other comments. With that, I'll call for a motion.
I'll make a motion that we pass the proposal submitted by the Fishing Game Colleges.
All three rules?
I make a motion we pass everything presented, as presented.
Good. Motion's been made by Rich. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Yeah. Rod? And second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Passes unanimously. With that, I don't see anything else on the agenda.
Can you adjourn?
Mr. Chairman, may I ask a question?
You betcha.
Before we close, I just spent some time on WebQuest, and where I previously seen the buffalo, I didn't see any this year. Have they moved? Or are they still there?
They move around quite a bit. I'm not sure which group are we seeing them.
I see them on Moon Ridge and up the first 10 miles through there, and I didn't see any last week.
Dax just sent me the latest greater telemetry day on them, but I haven't looked at it yet. But they kind of move back and forth on the trot and back, and you know, they move, if
we're learning anything about Buffalo, they're pretty good around. So, you know, with the first year, we were kind of panicked because they looked like they were all moving somewhere, and then a bunch of them came back, and they brought some private flights, and then they came back. So, they're there. They're just moving around.
I'd like to see a known dog.
You'd like to see where?
On Gosling Mountain.
Oh, Gosling Mountain.
Yeah.
Hey, Mr. Kutrakson. Southern Region implemented an elk committee. Do you have any information on that? At their last RAC meeting?
No, on that one in particular. You know, the director is trying to increase the number of elk statewide by several thousand. And so what they've looked at is trying to look at places where that's like the habitat and the agricultural impacts to understand that. Sort of the short answer is, it looks like most of the potential for growth was south of I-70.
Okay.
The way we do that, when we want to raise the population, is we form these committees where we get the local landowners, the local sportsmen, and we see if they can come to some sort of agreement. That's kind of the starting process. And then it comes up to the RAC and work from there. So you know, what you're seeing is a bit of a statewide effort to increase elk numbers. There weren't many places north of I-70 for identified as potential for increases.
I just didn't know if there was anything that we needed to consider in our region or something that we need to consider.
We've done it before, and we'll probably do them again. You're going to see some of that.
Okay.
We're going to go back and visit that. And that's the first step. It's just trying to see what sort of tolerance agriculture has for that and how we want to work that out.
Okay.
So, how many days did you spend down there, huh?
Week.
You see me?
Thanks, everybody. Here, appreciate you too. I know it's a big commitment.
No.
I'm waiting on the
sheet.
Oh,
it fell on my toes. That's been there for some time.
Yeah.
Get a signature, drive a personal vehicle to a solid meeting on the next
Thanks, Gil, for making all those copies of that training material.
I didn't make the copies. I just had them.
You just well, you just
come on now.
Got it.
That's where they were on these
last time. No, I found out last week that I was on the rest. So.